fully aware. You'll be going into what is a very strange state of consciousness. It's only afterwards when you emerge that you have the ability to ask, what was that? What was that I was in? It was so blissful and so peaceful, but I couldn't speak, as it were, with my mind in the time. I couldn't even make a thought come up. I couldn't describe it, but I was clearly aware. This is clear awareness with no inner speech. This is clear awareness with no will being possible. You cannot disturb the mind even if you want to. So when you're in one of these states, you can't say, now I'm going to come out. You are frozen, immobile, not able to think, not able to make a will, not able to do anything. You're just having a great time. Only when you come out after the energy of the jhana has expended itself, should you assess what that was. You ask yourself the question, what was that experience? Because these experiences are tremendously powerful, you will have no trouble at all remembering what that was. In the English language, we use the word trauma to describe some intense, painful experience. This is equally intense, but it is not painful at all. It is so positive, so beautiful, it will remain with you, or rather the memory will remain with you for life. It's interesting, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. These jhana experiences have also been experienced in other religious traditions. These jhana experiences in other traditions are often misunderstood. In the Christian mystic tradition, there are some old monks and nuns, in particular St. John of the Cross, Teresa of Avila, who could levitate. She was known, many times seen, to be rising up in the air. These people developed jhanas. However, when they went into this state, and the reason I'm saying this is because it gives you an indication of what these states are. When they went into this state, they thought that it was union with God. The reason was, this was a very powerful experience, the most powerful of their life. It was full of bliss and joy, and they thought that they weren't there. The doer, the will, had completely disappeared, and all there was this beautiful energy, pure mindfulness, bliss, of which they had no control inside the jhana. Anyone who's experienced those jhanas knows how a Christian with no other ideas of understanding those states would always say that that was God they experienced. The Buddhists know that that's not God they experience, it's just mind. And there's many more stages higher and deeper than that. In the Hindu tradition, they also practice jhanas, and they too say it's union with Brahma. However, it is exactly the same mistake they make. This is a powerful, blissful experience when it looks like they're not there. But it should be understood according to reality that this is the mind just being with itself. It's powerful, it's blissful, but there's still something more. So as a Buddhist, you should ask yourself when you emerge from these states, what was that? And try and find or describe to yourself the most prominent characteristics. To describe and find for yourself what those things are. After you've decided what that experience was, once you've described it to yourself, the next thing you should do is to ask yourself how that came about. What did you do to create that state? As I was mentioning earlier on to the retreatants here, one of the meditators in Perth who attained one of these states. That was the one again who got into a deep jhana and was taken to the hospital. He was all right, but his wife thought he was dead. He was actually perfectly okay. He was taken to the hospital, given defibrillators, electric shocks, nothing got him out of his jhana. And when his jhana was finished, he came out by himself and asked, "What am I doing here? How did I get here?" And just to let you know, because some people may have not heard this story, he was meditating, he got into jhana, his wife thought he was dead, she checked his pulse, checked his breathing, couldn't find either, called the ambulance, who came in with trained medics, they took his pulse again, checked his breathing, neither was apparent, they put him in the back of the ambulance on a stretcher, rushed him to the hospital, one of the best hospitals in Perth, put all the machines on him, there was neither brain waves nor heart activity. The EEG was flat and so was the ECG. He was technically dead, but the doctor on the emergency room at that time had Indian blood in him. His father was Indian. He'd heard in his boyhood about samadhi, about deep meditation, because the top of this man's body was warm rather than cold. It was just the only thing which suggested to him he wasn't dead. And so the doctor put on the electric shocks on his chest, boom, boom, many times. It still couldn't take him out of his samadhi. And after a couple of hours of that, he just came out by himself, sat up on the bench and asked to an astonished doctor and a very relieved wife, sort of, "Where am I? What am I doing? What happened?" And only then he had been told everything which had been done to him. That's the degree of separation from the body which happens in jhana. If you're in deep meditation, even if electric shocks go through you, will not know. Good story, eh? But in particular, the point I wanted to make here, that man said, for the first time in his meditation, he really let go. He analyzed what he did to get into that state. He was really letting go of the body, of thinking, of control, all of that. And he got into a state of very nice bliss. The reason I say that you should ask yourself, what did I do to get into these states, is because this is how you learn about meditation. You learn how you can repeat those states again and again by finding out the path into deep meditation. But more than that, by asking yourself what caused these states, you're gaining deep insight into the nature of the body and the nature of the mind. You're gaining deep insight. You find that letting go is what causes such amazing bliss. If you remember the Four Noble Truths of the Lord Buddha, first noble truth of suffering, the cause of suffering is craving. Now what's the third noble truth? It's the cessation of suffering. And what's the fourth noble truth? The path to that cessation is letting go. Letting go. Here you are experiencing what the Buddha meant by the Four Noble Truths. If you let go that much, you get enormous bliss. Bliss means ending of suffering. This is not the full Noble Truths. There's a lot more to come yet. But you're starting to experience a great deal of the Dhamma. A person who can get into jhanas knows that the bliss of those states is because the body and the five senses have been completely abandoned. In Buddhism, for those of you who've studied Buddhism deeply, you know that this is what we call the three worlds, the Triloka. The first of those worlds is called Kama Loka. The second of those worlds is called Rupa Loka. And the third of those worlds is called Arupa Loka. Kama Loka is the world of hell realms, ghost realms, animal realms, human realms, and the Deva realms, just up to but not including the Brahma realms. That is Kama Loka. When you get into jhana, you've left temporarily Kama Loka, the world of the five senses, and all that includes. You've actually experienced in your meditation the happinesses which are beyond the high heavens, the happiness of Brahma and all the devas above. It's interesting, the heavenly realms in Buddhism. Each of the heavenly realms is a higher happiness than the one before. All of those heavenly realms, such as the realm of the four great kings, the realm of the 33, the Yama realm, the Tusita realm, the realm of those who exert power over others, all of those realms, I'm sorry, I missed that one, the Nimanavati, who delight in creation, and the ones who exert power over others, each of those realms is a sensory happiness. It is why those devas up to those realms have both male and female. It's concerning with the body, with the five senses, with the joy of the five senses. Above that realm, in the Brahma realm, is the joys of the mind. There are no male or female Brahmas. Gender stops when you go into those realms. The reason is that this experience in first jhana is experience of a pure mind. A mind which is separated from the five senses and the body. It is strange, it is weird, it is nothing you expected it to be. One of the favorite sayings I have from the Lord Buddha, I mentioned this to you before, I mention it to you again, whatever you think it will always be different. However you imagine jhanas to be, even though I've given you the best explanation I can, it'll always be different than you expect. Very different. That's why the only way you can know these things is to go there yourself. What you see there is the mind itself, like the moon released from the clouds. That mind, once you've seen it, is very different than what you're experiencing now. And then you can understand what is the heart of this being which keeps it going from life to life. One of the insights which you should be able to get when you reflect on the experience of a jhana is that that mind is not something which will end at death. In the same way that a person could have electric shocks through their body and the mind didn't even feel them. You could cut the body in half. You could stab it, you could shoot it, you could burn it on a pyre. That mind would not feel it. It would just carry on. The body might die, but that mind which you see in jhana would always carry on. Have any of you, I made a simile the other day at Bickfield's temple, have any of you seen or even experienced out-of-the-body experiences? You may have seen on the television or read in books. You may have even had an out-of-the-body experience yourself. I remember many people, because I always like talking about such things, and people come and chat to me about them. One of the characters I know who could leave his body was a prisoner in Perth. He told me he didn't mind being in jail because he could leave any time he wanted. He could just float out of his body and go wherever he wanted, and no one knew. It's interesting, he told me that he got this experience when he was a young boy in Yugoslavia many years ago. He was very sick, and he was in hospital being operated on by a team of doctors. The next thing he knew, he was floating above his body, looking down on himself being operated upon, and he was dying. He knew that intuitively, even though he was only a young boy. But the interesting thing was, intuitively he knew that the doctors were looking in the wrong place in his body. And he said to me that he willed the doctors to look in the right place. Just a thought like that which came up, please may you look somewhere else. And one of them did immediately and saw the problem, and they all worked on that and they saved his life. And that's how he survived. And he said ever since that time, he was always able, whenever he wanted, to leave his body and go traveling around. Anyway, people who have those experiences, out-of-the-body experiences, there's a standard experience which most people go through, no matter what race or religion or gender or age. And I'm sure all of you know this. You rise out of your body, you're looking down at the body which you've temporarily left, and then you go towards a light, towards a beautiful light, and you go out the other side. That beautiful light, the nimitta, the reflection of the mind, is exactly the same. That which you experience in deep meditation, when the body, as it were, temporarily dies on you when you're doing deep meditation. It's not really dead, it's quite happy there, it's safe, you don't need to worry about it. Although your wife might take you to hospital without your permission. But it doesn't matter. You've got a good story to tell your friends. When the five senses and the body settle down, stop, when the switches of the body are turned off, you experience the mind. That's what happens in jhanas. It's also what happens at death. When you die, you'll see that light. That is just a manifestation of your mind. If you know what it is, then you can know how even to, as it were, almost manipulate rebirth. So doing these jhanas, you also find out about what happens at the time of death and what you're going to experience, each one of you, in the future. But also because in these jhanas you know this nature of the mind, you will never have any doubt in the future about the truth of rebirth. If you get into these jhanas and reflect upon them afterwards, you'll have perfect faith in the fact that this is not your only life, that you've lived before and you will live again. That experience for yourself, rather than just believing someone else or believing the texts, of the fact of rebirth is so important for you to affirm your faith as a Buddhist and also to direct your life here in this world. For those who truly know without a shadow of doubt that this is not the only life, there are many consequences. First, there is not the same fear of death. Even if you die young, so what? In the many lives you've lived, sometimes you've died young, sometimes you've died old, sometimes you've died in the middle. You've had all of the spans of life. So what's the big deal on this life, dying young or dying old? In fact, if you know the mind, you know that you're not dying, it's just the body is dying, but not you. A person who knows that will have no fear of death, will have no fear at the time of death, and will have no trouble about other people dying. As I've said here earlier, it's no different than changing your car. You get attached to your car. You may even give it a name, like people in England do. They call it Genevieve or something. You get attached to your vehicle, but this is just a vehicle. The vehicle's not you. So you have a full confidence in rebirth, and you have a full confidence that it's all right to die. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody had that confidence that rebirth is real and they'd have no fear of death? How much suffering there is in the world when somebody dies or they're about to die. How many people are prepared when you go to a doctor and they tell you, I'm very sorry, but you've got a cancer and it can't be cured, you're going to die in a few months. How many people are happy at that? Say, oh, at last, now I can end this life, the body's getting old, it's time to go. Wouldn't it be better to die when you're fit and healthy, reasonably, than to go into old age, where you have to be cared for so many years? Why do people want to live so long? Even as Buddhists, I mean, the Lord Buddha, he lived to 80. And some of you want to live beyond that. That's not respectful. That's only a joke. So if you know these experiences, you have no fear of death, and you understand that rebirth is a fact. Also, you can understand about karma, because karma is what molds this mind. Karma and rebirth are all about the mind. And this is the mind you're seeing in deep meditation. But more than that, deeper than that, if you can see that mind when it's released from the five senses, you'll always know that as the most blissful experience of your life. Now you ask why. Why is that blissful? And being in this body is so much pain. You're starting to know the Four Noble Truths. Sometimes we think that sights are beautiful, that sounds are sonorous, and we like to listen to music. Sometimes we like nice tastes, nice fragrances, nice touches. If you know that even the most pleasant touch in the world, the best fragrance, the best sound, the best taste, the best sight, can never be compared to that bliss of the mind, would you ever be attracted to the world of the five senses? If you truly knew that the bliss of the mind is so much more pleasurable than the body, then you'll never take a human body again. If you know that much, this human body is dukkha, you will gain the fruit of anagami, non-returner. You go to the Sudarvasa made of the mind, enjoying the bliss of the mind because you're attached to that mind, that bliss. But you're almost to nibbana, just one small step left. That's why it is a wonderful thing to achieve these states. It gives you an insight and understanding of the nature of this body and mind, which is not accessible in any other way. This last simile I use, which is perhaps the most powerful, is a simile of the tadpole living in the water. A tadpole in the water can never know that water's wet. How can it know that water's wet when it's been born in that water, lived in that water, grown up in that water, and known just water? So a frog comes along and says, water's wet, but there's such a thing called dry land. And it's not really quite sure what dry land means. And it sort of has all these ideas and theories about dry land. In much the same way, the Lord Buddha comes into this world and said, this world is dukkha, but there's such a thing as nibbana. Free from dukkha. And people have all sorts of ideas about what nibbana is. How could a person who's not left dukkha even know what Nibbana is. In the same way, how can a tadpole who's lived all its life in water know what dryness is? It's completely beyond comprehension. You may have ideas and theories, even write books. Some tadpoles do write books on dry land. But what is it worth? But one day that tadpole, as all you tadpoles will one day do, will leave the water and go on to dry land. And then you realize, ah, that's what dry land is. And that's what wetness is. This is what Nibbana is. This is what dukkha is. You need that experience in order to understand. Or like another simile, like imagine a person who was born in prison and brought up in prison and grown all and had all their life in prison. Would they be even able to realize what prison was? They'd be used to it. They'd call it home. And the Buddha comes along and digs a tunnel, an escape tunnel, out of that prison into freedom. That tunnel is called the Eightfold Path. And he tells all the prisoners inside that jail, there's a tunnel here and you can escape if you want. Most prisoners don't want to escape. They're quite happy in jail because that's all they know. And the Lord Buddha said, on the other side is freedom, Nibbana. It's really lovely. The prisoners say, well, I'm not quite sure what that is anyway. I'd rather stay in jail. But the prisoners are very compassionate. They go to other cells and they paint the cells and make them beautiful. But is that really getting out of prison? No matter how beautiful you paint the cell, it's still prison. This is when we try and do good deeds to others. We're compassionate and kind. But shouldn't we really be trying to get out of this problem of old age, suffering and death? There is a tunnel there. Go and take it. And if you go out of that tunnel, you realize what Nibbana is. And you'll experience it for yourself. It does need a bit of faith in the Lord Buddha's teaching to actually walk in that tunnel. Or a little bit of adventure, a bit of courage, and a sense of adventure to go into these deep jhanas and actually experience what the Buddha experienced. How did the Lord Buddha become enlightened? What was he doing under the Bodhi tree? You all know that, and that's a good place to leave this talk. So that ends the talk on jhanas, skillful ways into them, and what to do after you've attained those, and the meaning of those jhanas to gain the powerful insights of true liberation. That ends the talk this evening. Are there any questions? Any questions or comments? Maybe I will mention just a little bit. Sometimes people ask me, well, have I got enough karma, good karma, to get into jhanas? And sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm just an ordinary person. I haven't got enough good karma to get into jhanas, so they don't even try. How do you know unless you give it a try? The Lord Buddha said the only people who can't get into jhanas, who can't get enlightened, are those people who have murdered their father, murdered their mother, killed an arahat, shed the blood of a Buddha, caused a schism in the Sangha, violated a bhikkhuni. Have any of you done any of that? If you haven't, then you can get into jhanas and become enlightened. Yep. What about wrong views? Wrong views are an obstacle to jhana and enlightenment, but wrong views can always be changed in this life. always have an open mind.